Meandering in the margins of medicine, it's the Short Code Podcast.
Welcome back to the Short Code Podcast.
Yeah!
As you can tell, we're being joined by our very first studio audience for the Short Code Podcast. We've got a program here at the University of Iowa that we like to call Intro to Medical Education at Iowa, which is for students who want to get a jump start on the basic science curriculum before they actually matriculate in the fall. And these guys have been hard at work since, what, June, right? So, and they're almost at the last week of the program. So congratulations to you all.
Yeah.
Very nice. Also joining me are Allison Pletch, Keenan Laraway, Cole Chaney, Eric Wilson, and of course me, your host, Dave Etler. So it's been a while since we got together, and you know, what with the 4th of July holiday, I took a short vacation. So we've had a few weeks off, and maybe we've got some catching up to do. For instance, what have you been doing, Allison?
My summer has been pretty busy.
Yeah.
I am doing a lot of studying, basically. Not much has changed for me.
So, okay. Well, that was exciting.
Yeah, it doesn't get much more exciting than that.
I went camping.
Well done.
Where?
I went camping with my family for the first time since they were babies. My wife wasn't a baby. But the last time we went camping, they were in diapers, and it was a horror show, so we haven't been in years. So we went camping outside of Des Moines. We went far.
It's like the boundary waters.
I know, it was like crazy.
That sounds like something someone from Iowa, or somebody that's not from Iowa would say. Where did you go camping? Outside Des Moines.
Well, it was in Grimes, which I think sounds even worse.
Grimey. It does.
In a state park there. Reviews were mixed. My daughter sobbed for the first 3 hours. Literally. I'm not kidding.
Was cell phone reception bad?
What
was the deal?
She's only six, so there's no cell phone. But there was no air conditioning. There were bugs everywhere. She got bit by a mosquito, and it turns out she has Skeeter syndrome. Has anybody heard of this?
Skeeter.
No. That sounds real to me.
I know, right? The internet says it's real. She got bit by a mosquito, and it swelled up to about the size of a golf ball. And we were like, what the it turns out that this is just something that happens to children. But then the next day, she got stung by a wasp, which was inside her dress when she put it on in the morning.
Oh.
And, yeah.
You're the best dad ever.
I was going to say. Super dad award.
Yeah.
My son was suffering from an acute lack of Minecraft, so, he seemed to. And I had a good time, so to hell with him. It was great. Anybody else got anything?
I'm torturing mice as usual. I think we talked about this last podcast.
Yes, you've been putting
them on treadmills.
Treadmills in the woods and things like that.
You know, they get 3 square meals a day, water, healthcare. They get taken care of better.
They're fine.
They're okay.
Don't you like induce cancer or something in them too?
Well, occasionally.
Yeah.
There's also cocaine studies though, so it depends on which mouse you are, I suppose.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Don't people in prison get the similar treatment?
Yeah. 3 square meals a day and cocaine, I think I've seen that before.
I'm not convinced that is a standard of life, but it's worth.
And I'm doing RAGBRAI next week. That's my big thing.
Oh,
that is the ride across Iowa.
IME students from Iowa or from elsewhere?
Iowa.
We've got a couple Iowans. So RAGBRAI, if you haven't heard about RAGBRAI, it's the bicycle trip across the state. Hundreds of people get on their bikes and for some reason bike across the state in the middle of summer, which to me sounds like a terrible, terrible, terrible idea. But that's because
it's Iowa.
I don't do things like that.
You and your daughter sound like you're related.
Oh yeah.
Thank you.
Absolutely. There's no way. I mean, I would, if I was to do it, I would probably have a magnetic lasso that I could like throw out and like
draft off the other bikers.
Have it stick to a bus or something, because they have the team buses.
Yep.
Do it also. So
there's bikes now that somehow store kinetic energy in the back tire. Mm-hmm. So when you're going downhill, stores it, and then when you go uphill, it releases it.
That's my bike.
And so did you learn about this when reading about Skeeter syndrome?
It was on the internet. Did you see it?
That is totally my bike. I would go electric all the way. Maybe even gas powered. People would frown at me.
Yes.
Keenan, you're a fourth year. You're a newly minted fourth year.
Rumor has it.
Yeah, and so you're a busy What?
I mean, you can use whatever epithet you want, but
what are you?
Right now I'm a busy renal consultant.
Renal consultant.
Yes, I'm.
All right. Nephrology.
Nephrology.
Very nice. And Eric Wilson?
Yeah. I'm here.
Present.
Eric's doing nothing.
Well, I'm on outpatient internal med on my APM rotation, so outside of the 8 to 5, I kind of am doing nothing. But I had a great 2 weeks off before I started. Went out to Yellowstone and Grand Tetons, did some hiking, and it wasn't quite as traumatic as your camping experience, but...
No, it wouldn't have been.
But yeah, I had a great time.
You didn't sob for the first 3 hours.
No, I think my brother and sister may have when we were making them hike everywhere and go 10, 12 miles in a day, but they got over it eventually.
Did your lady friend Dviju go with you?
No, she was in India at the time. She was doing her practicum for MPH.
Nice.
So...
Wow, that's cool. I wish she was here to talk about it. Instead, we got you.
Whoa.
You know, we could have the IMEI people do sound effects for us. And, wah, wah.
Yeah. It's a laugh track.
Well, good. I'm so glad you guys could join me today. So I want to start out the Insightful News Analysis segment with a story that I picked up from Vox.com. About a 30-year medical student at the University of Rochester who is very concerned with the public health impact of Dr. Mehmet Oz and his pseudoscientific advice. Did you guys hear about this story? So he went to the New York State Medical Association, and I think that's what it's called, and to the AMA and said, hello, this Dr. Oz guy is... putting out a lot of pseudoscience. And he's been in the news also. I mean, he was before Congress recently, Dr. Oz, for basically making money off of his pseudoscientific claims.
Mm-hmm.
So this student would like the AMA and the New York State Medical Society to regulate this sort of behavior. This seems to make sense, right?
It's all... Yeah. There's a lot of opinion in this on both sides.
Yeah. Okay. So Dr. Oz supporter?
Possibly.
Oh, okay.
In that,
all right.
So he's definitely speaking with hyperbole, right? So he's have you guys seen these advertisements? He's saying that this, I think it was this cream, I think, that he said, you know, the results are staggering. You know, I feel like you look 5 years younger. And I think from a marketing aspect, maybe 5 years is a very, from a medical aspect, 5 years needs to be actually, okay, is it documented, right? Are your cell, like, you, 5 years is a very concrete term.
Mm-hmm.
I think he's reading off a teleprompter.
Oh,
I
yeah.
think he's probably getting a little money from this.
Yeah.
We all know that.
Yeah, I think so.
But the question is, because he carries the title doctor, is he not allowed to do that at all?
Yeah, well, it...
Is sales in any capacity wrong for a doctor?
Right.
Well, I don't know.
Well, what the student wants, what this student, Benjamin Mazur, wants is for... the AMA and the New York State Medical Association to treat health advice on television in the same vein as expert testimony, which already has established guidelines for truthfulness. I did not look up those guidelines because what am I, NPR? But that sounds kind of reasonable. I mean, I think the distinction, I mean, even bloggers now have to say, you know, whether they're getting money for... you know, a particular bit of information that they're putting on their blog or not. Otherwise, they can get into trouble with the, I don't know, the blogging associate. I don't know. Somebody important.
It's kind of interesting. I actually don't really care so much about the Dr. Oz side of the thing. I'm more interested in why it was a third-year medical student that decided that this was their crusade. And I think it's something along the lines of they just have energy still. You know, you're in your third year, yeah. You're still
so
excited.
So you're all beaten down, and you're like a physician, like, oh,
I mean, once you hit residency, you know, some of the people I've seen, they just, there's no time or energy to do that sort of crusade.
Yeah.
But
so well, the idealism is still alive and well, maybe.
Well, he's not the only one who has discussed this. I guess, basically, the New York State Association did pass a modified version of Mazur's proposal. But the AMA has done nothing, and Mazur believes that the AMA is basically afraid that undermining Dr. Oz could undermine overall trust, prestige, and income enjoyed by doctors. So
I'm not sure I agree with that concern, because Dr. Oz in my opinion, without having thought about it too much, seems to be trying to combine.
We don't think about the things.
Okay.
I mean, let's just make that clear.
He seems to be trying to combine entertainment with medical advice. And I think those things are distinct and should be definitely kept distinct. There's a thick line, in my opinion, between the two. And there are examples of physicians who are both entertainers and have medical degrees, but they do not use their medical expertise as a basis for their entertainment. The actor I'm thinking of now is, he's Asian.
Kim, he's a guy from Hangover.
Hangover, yeah. He's a freaking doctor. He's an internal medicine doctor who decided to become a comedian. He doesn't practice anymore. And yes, he's played doctors in movies, but I don't think people go to movies for medical advice. And so I think that the distinction is pretty clear in movies.
Well, I think the problem is that people go to Dr. Oz for medical advice, right? And and then the other situation that Mazur pointed out was that when patients come into their doctor and says, "Well, Dr. Oz told me that you know if I use this supplement, I will I will get erections again," you know, like, and their doctor says, "Well, that's crap. You know, that's not true. There's no scientific evidence." And the patient says, "Well, I'm going to go with Dr. Oz. He's the one who's got the television shows and the big media exposure." That undermines the doctor-patient relationship, and that's what Mazur and his supporters are concerned about. So
Dr. Drew's in a similar boat. I feel like he kind of blurs the line.
Is he even around anymore?
Yeah, he's big on Loveline Forever, right? That was the big deal. But then Celebrity Rehab, I think, and then also a CNN show or a HLN, I think.
Oh, okay.
But there's definitely, it's not only entertainment. There's a little bit of dispensing of addiction medicine advice.
And I think that's what this proposal is all about. Is if you're dispensing medical advice, then that advice should be treated in the same way that expert testimony is treated. I think that sounds pretty reasonable.
I think there are also examples of, I don't know if it was the AMA, again, not research, but that's totally in line with what we're doing. There was a physician who was making a ton of money off of being an expert witness, and he was almost like the proportion of his income based on being an expert witness was, far more than what he made based on clinical work, to the point where people were calling into question his clinical, is he a clinical expert, at this point. And I think that there was this court, we did it in ethics, I don't know if you remember. So there's this court case and...
there are no ethics.
Yeah. We took an ethics class this last semester. And the court case was whether or not he had the right to be called on and act as an expert witness. And I think that ultimately the courts said that he was, but then he was kicked out. His membership to the AMA was revoked. So on that level, maybe the AMA can, assert their opinion by, relegating or controlling who is allowed to be a member. And if you're not a member of the AMA, maybe that's enough to question your legitimacy.
Physician and journalist Dr. Ford Vox says Amazon sells a number of dangerous steroids, muscle relaxants, and prescription antibiotics delivered to your door without a prescription. This is according to actually several stories that I read recently. So basically, you can go to Amazon, you can type in methylcarbinol. Does anybody know what that is? It's a drug that gives a mild high, and so is a potential drug of abuse. You can get anabolic steroids. You can get clindamycin, which is an antibiotic used in hospitals that can result in a C. diff or severe skin reaction called Stevens-Johnson syndrome. You can get all of these on Amazon, apparently. Thus far, there's been no reaction from the FDA or Customs and Border Protection. Many of the shipments come from outside the U.S., so that would be why they would be involved. There's been no reaction from Amazon, and other than to say, well, we're kind of just the conduit. It's a pretty robotic platform, according to Vox. So they don't really know everything that they're selling, and anybody can sell anything on Amazon, apparently. So, and then just yesterday, the FDA has been charged with knowingly shipping prescription drugs from illegal online pharmacies. They're accused of knowing about this for a decade. FedEx, of course, says, "Well, how are we supposed to know?" And they've asked for the DEA for a list of illegal pharmacies so they can stop shipping from them, but the DEA hasn't provided a list. So yeah, if you want to get illegal drugs, you can go to Amazon.
See, back in the day, the big deal.
Not illegal drugs, prescription drugs.
Yeah, that used to be Mexico. I always remember. You always hear stories of people going down to Mexico and finding. I think prescription painkillers was probably the big deal. But it's hilarious that now instead of going down to Mexico, you can just order it to your front door.
Yeah, that going to Mexico is expensive. I'm just going to go online.
There's a drone that drops off my.
A drone. I think the FCC put the kibosh on the drone.
It's not cool anymore.
The drone thing. Yeah, they were like, yeah, no. We're not going to deliver your drugs by drone.
How much of this comes back to us as healthcare providers, though? I mean, I think as the market opens up and as the electronic world opens up, and we were talking now about Dr. Oz and providing information, you know, one of our crusades here at the University of Iowa and at academic institutions is stewardship of medications, and it comes to a head with antibiotics, but it's true of all medicines. I'm on a crusade to stop people's benzodiazepines that they don't need because it only causes problems. They predispose to delirium and all of this other stuff that is not good. But are we doing a good job explaining to people why they do or do not need medicines and hearing their concerns on that? I just think I talked to the IMEI people about patient perspective. Are we doing a good enough job obtaining their perspective on why they feel that they need to get this medicine? And are we addressing those concerns, or have they just been told, you don't need this medicine, now go away, and they've chosen to obtain it in less than honorable ways?
But I suppose if people don't have... people don't have healthcare coverage. Maybe their doctor says, "Well, you need an antibiotic," and they're like, "Well, I can't really afford that, so I'm going to go to Amazon and just type in antibiotic."
And is it cheaper on Amazon?
I don't know. And then they come up with clindamycin.
Let's find out.
Clindamycin covers a lot of stuff. I mean, if you can tolerate the C. diff.
Yes. A little diarrhea never hurt anybody. Right?
That was not medical advice.
I think a really big example of. A huge need of communication between doctors and patients regarding therapies. And I'm sorry to open this can of worms, vaccines. I think that this issue with vaccines can be addressed and should be addressed with really intense communication, like intense meetings between parents or patients themselves,
like
and physicians.
Style,
like almost
music,
that.
Mood lighting.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
to get the point across, you know, not just say I need to give your kid a vaccine and not really explain thoroughly why, or we need to stop this drug and not explain thoroughly why,
or maybe just, you know, dispensing with the whole idea of, well, not the whole idea, but dispensing, at least in this case, with the whole idea of, well, it's the patient's choice. I mean, yeah, it's the patient's choice. But at the same time, you can say, okay, that's your choice. It's stupid.
So again,
and here's why.
So we talked about this in that talk, and now looking at the IMEI students again, stepping on autonomy or assuming authority is the other side of this. And, you know, until this changes, until patients don't have the right to choose, we have to work inside that system. And I'm respectfully disagreeing with you, because we have to work inside that system and we have to have that intense communication while not actually being in charge.
Yeah,
I have this kid that I'm not actually in charge of, but I desperately want him to get vaccinated. How do I accomplish that?
I was being a bit hyperbolic for effect. I don't really think you should say, you know, I know it's crazy, but I don't think you should say it's stupid, but I think you should explain why it's stupid and not be so, you know, like, oh, well, okay, it's your choice. I mean, you have to educate your patient, and if that means, and sometimes that means a slap in the face.
This is not medical advice.
Metaphorically speaking.
No, I agree.
I think that comes back to the whole pressure on primary care and short visits, and how do you prioritize, you know, what you're going to talk about. And so you almost have to have a completely separate meeting for that, but then there's already a shortage of primary care physicians, and getting in can be hard. And so do you talk to them about, like, you know, the children's vaccines, or do you talk to them about, you know, safe child restraints? Do you talk to them about, you know, what should you be feeding them, or like sleeping things? And
I think that there are some solutions to this issue in primary care where visits are only 15 minutes. And how do you convince someone that they should vaccinate their kid in that amount of time when it might not take that much time, or when you don't have that much time? And there's something they're doing at the University of Iowa, which I got to see, and I really wish I could remember the physician's name, but I can't right now. But he works a lot with migrant workers, and something that he started to do was hold informational meetings for large groups of people. So if he has, you know, if a certain percentage of his the population people that he treats has hypertension, instead of spending, you know, an hour with each person explaining what hypertension is and the drugs that they need, he invites them all to an informational meeting. And in that way, he, you know, distributes information to a large group of people, targeted group of people, all from the same community. So in some ways, he's also building community within or among people who have the same, you know, health challenges. And I think that's a really cool approach.
That's a good way to do it. I was thinking, you know, last episode we talked about, I think it was Missouri, or was it Minnesota? Missouri, who is coming up with the assistant physician, as distinct from physician assistant, by the way. These assistant physicians, that might be an area, you know, and we were like, okay, well, what does that mean?
Or are these the unmatched? So Missouri has a thing where if you are unmatched, you can be, and it is, I think, called assistant physician. Is that what it?
You do a 9-month intern, and then you are I don't know if you're called a physician assistant.
Assistant physician.
AP.
Just to, you know.
AP.
Just to be, you know, assistant, make things really clear.
Yeah. Very different. Yeah.
No, but I think that's a good point, because, you know, 55 years ago or 65 years ago or whenever it was, the community physician was the authority on all of these things. And we have sort of lost some of our authority because there's so many other sources of information, some good, some not so good. But these physicians who are taking the initiative to go into the community, whether it's through these meetings or in my hometown, the cardiologists do this thing called cooking with a cardiologist at the grocery store, where they show you how to prepare these meals that they're always talking about, or they'll appear on the local news station. It's trying to re-engender some of that trust in the local physician so that you can further build that relationship in the office. I think that's a big thing.
And maybe that's the way to, you know, if you feel strongly about Dr. Oz, maybe that's the way to counteract Dr. Oz.
I should get my own TV show.
Yes, get your own TV show, damn it. I'm going to take a break for myself. Let's hear from you, Cole.
I got some news.
Yes.
Okay. Would you rather do conspiracy theory or obvious research? I would think
conspiracy theory.
Yeah. Well, this one. So there was the Malaysian crash. There was a number of world famous AIDS researchers, and so this has started the conspiracy theory around, you know, some global pharmaceutical coup to take down this airplane, right? So Dr. Lang was shot down. He was an Australian guy from the University of Amsterdam.
I'm sorry, he was on this plane?
He was on this plane. Okay. He's the world-renowned AIDS researcher, and he's also a big proponent of community AIDS prevention, as opposed to maybe an interventionist or an expensive treatment style.
Sure.
Okay? So prominent advocate for affordable drugs for AIDS, patients in poor countries, him along with three other leaders in the area of clinical research and drug development. And they also led the WHO back in the mid-90s. And so they all died in this tragic accident. And so this has made some people question, was this perhaps part of something bigger?
So wait a minute. Are we talking about the yesterday's tragic crash?
Not the missing.
Not the missing.
Yeah, there's too many Malaysian flights at this point to keep track of.
Never get on an airplane.
Yeah. So that's the conspiracy theory. No one can really speak to that at all. Interesting, though.
I think you can find you can always find those connections, no matter what. You could probably go find like three other people that were on there and come up with something, some other conspiracy theory as well. And then maybe
America
all those
loves the conspiracy theory.
Though. Yeah, maybe those other, you know, the people against the community thing for AIDS and the other group I find another one. Maybe they're all working together.
Well,
so it's a giant.
It's you know what? It's as tragic as that disaster, as the downing of this plane yesterday is. Its connection to this HIV researcher, and as sad as I am for his passing, it's no problem because wait a minute, let me do that again. That was dramatic.
What do you got?
The Egyptian military has announced that a device it claims it invented to cure AIDS and hepatitis C exists.
It does both?
It does both.
Okay.
It is the Egyptian army. The Egyptian army's engineering agency back in February said they've come up with an astonishing, miraculous invention that could detect HIV and hepatitis without using blood samples and purify the blood of sufferers.
Is this real?
This is an actual thing that the Egyptian army is claiming. Unfortunately, they now say, as of late June, that the device needs more testing before it's made available.
How much does one of these things cost?
I don't know. It didn't. The articles I read did not say.
I'm pretty sure Dr. Mike Voigt can cure Hep C for like $200,000. So if it's more than that, it's a waste of money.
Okay. Fair enough. The Major General Gamal El Sarafi is the director of the Armed Forces Medical Department of the Egyptian Army, and says that scientific integrity mandates that I delay the start of the public release until the experimentation period is over. The Armed Forces still plan to set up a medical center to treat the virus, treat these viruses in the Suez Canal province, but generals are pouting, saying that the skepticism by scientists and the public is all part of a foreign plot to rob Egypt of a major scientific victory. It's a device. It is a so the picture I saw was it's a device. It's like it looks like a plastic gun, maybe the handle of a. It looks almost. It reminds me almost exactly of the handle of a laparoscopic device. Or a camera.
I'm there with you. Yeah,
you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah,
and apparently you just pointed at somebody. You don't even have to take their blood.
Does this remind anybody else of that Marvin the Martian Daffy Duck disintegrate? Brother, when it disintegrates, it disintegrates.
I will detect your HIV.
What do you know? It disintegrated.
This reminds me of the guy.
So we're safe from the playing. The loss of this HIV researcher.
So yeah, we don't need him apparently.
Yeah,
because we just got the HIV stun gun.
Yeah.
Okay. I feel like this is a situation where you almost have like a Dr. Oz situation, but with an entire government backing him up.
Yeah.
You know, they can just come out and if you have the entire government backing you up, you can say pretty much anything.
That's the way to do it.
Well, they're the right place to test it.
Dr. Oz, what an idiot! He didn't have the government backing him up.
Well, there was this member, I think it was mid-90s, and someone had revolutionized transportation, but he wouldn't explain what it was, right?
Oh,
I created this device that you will never walk the same, will never bike the same, and it has a gyroscope built into it, but I can't release it yet, right? So all this hype got built, and then he released a Segway, and now there's like 100 of them in Central Park, and that's it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just
there was one. There was actually a researcher who used to go back and forth down the hallway with his Segway.
It reminds me of those internet ads that are like, lose your belly fat with this one weird trick, you know? Yep. Like that's what the...
Some weird melon seed thing.
Yeah, ad campaign for this device is going to be.
Well, I wish them luck. I mean, it's a worthy cause.
Okay, I have one funny study we got to do.
All right, no, go for
it. British study, okay? Title.
These have worked out so well in the past.
Yeah. Yeah, these... So, the study found... Why can pot make you paranoid? Was the question, okay?
All right.
And so they look at it. They isolated all the chemicals, apparently. I think I don't know if it's legal there or not in Britain, but I think the rules are perhaps different. Maybe decriminalization. They took 121 volunteers and they injected them with each chemical. And they'd say, how many paranoid thoughts are you having right now? I typically have one per moment, but these people maybe had multiple paranoid thoughts, right?
Wow, science. And,
yeah, per second. So, anyway, half the people...
That's the stupidest thing I've ever... I'm not even a scientist. I was a psychology major. I got a Bachelor of Arts in psychology, and I'm a clerk at the College of Medicine here. I have no idea... what science is, and yet even I know that is the stupidest experimental design I've ever heard.
Plus, with or without pot, if someone sits over you going, hey,
are you paranoid
or not?
What about now?
Yeah.
Do you know that works with people and itching? If you ask somebody,
are
you itchy? Who in here is itchy right now? And it does, right? I mean, yeah.
So what they found in particular?
They found one in five people were paranoid who did not use they used placebo. So there's one in five people that are just paranoid in general, and then half the people that were injected with THC, the equivalent of one use of marijuana, half of them were paranoid, and it lasted a very linear effect with the THC concentration of their blood. So as it went down, the paranoia went down as well.
So THC, smoking gun right there, and also people standing over you asking if you're paranoid.
Yeah, it's like a...
Can you control for that? Is there like some sort of statistical thing you can do to like take out the idiot researcher who's standing there?
I think the research
is called an IRB.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Reminds me of this really scientific study that was performed by, I think, Fox News, trying to figure out like.
And you know,
figured out who I'm going to school with. As she said, Fox News. Everyone starts laughing.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you'll laugh too. It was pretty laughable. So what they did was they wanted to discuss or have a show or segment on how being high can affect your driving ability. And so they got three volunteers who had prescriptions for marijuana, and they asked them to smoke. Okay, now he's smoking this quantity. Let's see how well he can drive. And then they'll, you know, record him driving around a track. And then,
well, that's good.
Yeah, well,
safety first.
I just was watching this, and then they keep, you know, giving him more to smoke and measuring the quantity of marijuana that he's smoking until he's like not able to control himself on the road very well, you know.
Science.
Yeah,
obvious sciences.
Really illuminating.
Similarly, linear relationship is inexplicable.
Wow. I just want to, as we approach the close of the show, I just want to turn around and look outside, as I'm wont to do for each of these podcasts in the communities lately, and just look at the progress that is being made outside. Now, you IME students have no idea how horrible this has been, okay? You can't, when you were here for your interviews, right, you saw, what did you see? Was it still a hole in the ground?
Big crater.
Big crater in the ground? We were looking at that crater for like 5 years or 4 years or something crazy like that, and now it's about to blossom.
I am impressed. I didn't even take a good look at this.
No, I mean, we've got trees. We've got ornamental grass. They haven't put down the lawn yet, but that looks like it's right around the corner. And I have spent a significant portion of the last few weeks prowling the new building, I have to say.
I have a friend who's been doing the same thing, and I won't mention his name to get him in trouble, but he says that he said that the security system is not up and running yet, and so you can like go up on the roof.
Oh, shoot. Oh, no.
This is not medical advice.
I will. Oh,
anyway,
no.
It's supposed to be very cool, very beautiful.
I haven't done that.
Wink.
No, I really haven't. But I did get locked in a stairwell yesterday with another staff member.
And in this building, I'm sure you couldn't call for help.
Well, we came close to doing that, but we were able to find an open door. There's a beautiful, if you get a chance to go down to that end of the building, there's a beautiful coffee shop that is available for your viewing pleasure, if not your coffee beverage consuming pleasure. And we've got heated sidewalks.
Wow.
It's just super exciting. And there are also, you can't really see it from where we're sitting right now, but there are these strange sort of walls that sort of snake up out of the ground and then go back into the ground and then come back out of the ground. And they are surrounding what looks to be a path, and they will backfill that with earth and make these sort of decorative berms around them. So it's very exciting. I suspect, though,
nothing better than a good berm.
I know. I want a berm. Hey, the IME students are leaving. Please applaud for us while you go.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining us. So on that note, I think I'm going to close this out, because now it's all sad that they're leaving. I am just super excited about the opening of this building and this quad.
Me too.
And I can't wait. I cannot wait. The top of my head is coming off. I'm being totally serious. The top of my head is almost.
I just feel like
Dr. Oz has drugs for that too, I think.
First time that you emerge from the building, it's going to start raining and you're going to be dancing in the rain.
Almost literally. I'm so excited.
It's like straight from.
Thank you so much, guys, for coming. We'll see you next time on the Short Code Podcast.
The Short Code is produced by the Writing and Humanities Program at the University of Iowa Carver College of Medicine, with support from Medical Student Government. You can visit us online at theshortcoat.com, or you can find us on Facebook and Twitter, too, where we post not only our episodes, but news and info for medical students. We also take comments and story ideas from you, our listeners, via email at theshortcoats@gmail.com, or leave us a voice message at 347-SHORT-CT. That's 347-746-7828. The producers are Jason T. Lewis and David T. Etler. Our opening music is by Dude Skywalker, and our closing theme music is by R.A.C. Thanks for listening.
But what I see's a child.
Inside Stories is an oral narratives project that catalogs the stories of medical students during their journeys through medical school. The podcast is hosted on In Training, the online magazine for medical students. Visit us at in-training.org/inside-stories. Inside Stories is a founding member of Vocalis, the podcast network for medical students. Please listen to our partner podcasts at vocalisnetwork.wix.com/listen.